Hi, you're listening to Building Business Brands. I'm Tony Gibbs, and today we're joined by Nick Rayburn. Nick is here to tell us all about story branding. Nick, welcome to the show.
Hi, mate. How you doing?
Yeah, good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, good. I'm good, considering it's kind of midweek almost, and we're getting close to the Christmas slowdown. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to a bit of time off, I think, definitely.
It's that last hurdle, isn't it? It's a tricky one.
Yeah, I think it's and it's been a strange year as well. I think a lot of people are ready to kind of just hunker down for Christmas and just forget that 2020 ever happened.
Yeah, for sure. I know I am. Okay, so if you're listening at home, you can learn a little bit more about Nick in the show notes. So for now, let's launch right into it. Nick, you're here to talk about story branding, but what exactly is story branding?
Story branding is the amplification of, the way I see it, is the amplification of who you are through the lens of your business. So I think with kind of personal brand and kind of brand building, a lot of people don't realize that the businesses that they create are a reflection or an extension of who they are. And until you know who you are as a person, it's very difficult to appeal to a target market or segment because you don't know who you are. So you can't create a business around that to include products or services that amplify who you are. So I've kind of been through it, I think, probably over the past year or so, and I've been through a lot of kind of personal self-development. And it sounds very new agey and spiritual, but I've kind of found myself, I think, through my content. And it's allowed me to create services and a brand off of the back of that, because I now know who I am, which sounds weird, but it's completely true. Everything that we do involves some way of telling stories. You know, when we sell to people, we tell stories, and there, when you actually sit and kind of think about it from a creative aspect, there's no one better suited to doing that than creatives and people that tell stories, because anything you do that involves your brand, you are telling a larger kind of story. The way I kind of try and do it with my content is I kind of focused on the core of kind of who I am and kind of extended my content out from that. So it's kind of like, I suppose, like to use a sort of galaxy analogy, but you know, you've got the kind of sun at the center and you've got all these kind of planets that orbit it, or it's almost like kind of chapters in a book, I suppose. So you kind of got this kind of core central theme of who you are, and then all this narrative kind of comes off the back of it, but it's one big overarching story. And it's very difficult for people to figure that out, like I said, until you know thyself.
Ace, wonderful, thanks for that description. So I see you post a lot on LinkedIn, as you say. You're incredibly prolific and it's very inspiring. And when you do post, you strike me as someone that's not afraid to put the personality into their content. And it sounds like from what you're saying, that's almost essential. Would you say that's a key ingredient of getting noticed?
Hugely, yeah. It's a massive part of it. People are afraid with their businesses there's a lot of businesses that are very, very corporate, very dry, and very grey. I'll use a good example, but I had Jerry Williams on my show a little while ago, and she's an accountant. She runs a business called Smooth Accounting, and she is the complete 180 degree of what you expect an accountant to be. And because of that, she stands out a country mile. You know, most accountants that kind of, they're just sorry for any accountants listening, but they're dull and grey and drab, and by, you know, by the very essence. So you've got no real competition. If you stand out and be yourself, you're going to stand out a country mile in terms of marketing, and people are going to be you know, they're going to flock to you because you are different, because you know, you are unique and you are yourself. And yeah, it kind of goes back to personal brand, and I kind of hate that word, but it's there is no one more unique than you, and the stories that have got you to the point where you are in your journey and your business. So use them to tell all the things that you've been through, your history, your past up until this point. They are unique, specific and unique to you, and no one else will have been through those experiences except you. So that makes you unique in terms of what you're selling and who you are and your how personable you are as a human being. So yeah, it goes to that. It's being the most true, authentic version of yourself you can be. And there's with sales in particular, you know, people think that we need to appeal to everyone. You're never going to sell to everyone with the products that you're selling. And I know sales is a dirty word for a lot of people, but if you can, I hate to use him as an example, because he's not a particularly nice person, but you look at Donald Trump, he's a prime example. He's almost the embodiment of social media in terms of the people that vehemently dislike him, really dislike him, but the people that like him love him. So I'm not comparing myself to Donald Trump by any means, but you need to be not afraid to draw a line in the sand and say, this is who I am, and you're either going to like me or you're not going to like me.
Right, so you've almost got to embrace both sides, the people that love you and hate you.
Yeah, be Marmite, basically.
Okay.
And another great example of that on the platform is Chris Williams. He's not afraid to push the boundaries in terms of peeing people off or, you know, just being himself. He's unashamedly himself. I think it's scary for a lot of business owners to do that because they think, oh, you know, how's that going to impact on my business? And, you know, it will do more good than harm for your business if you allow yourself to go through that process of doing it.
Yeah, I suppose psychologically some people are wanting to put a mask up so they don't have to show their real selves to the world.
Yeah, yeah. So that's the hugely scary part about doing this. It's you know, kind of going to those places that, and I'm sure I've seen multiple quotes about this, but the things that we fear to do are usually the things that are the best things for us. So when we start to, you know, explore those places, the outcomes from it, they far outweigh the negatives from it. And it's, you know, it's almost like body armor when you kind of go to those places and you think, oh, that wasn't as scary as I thought. It's like, well, I can wear that now with pride. And it's like that's my, you know, I've been through that and it wasn't as scary as I thought it was. And people respect me more for it. And people admire bravery. They admire people that, you know, that are willing to go that extra distance. Those kind of brands and those kind of stories are aspirational. They're the things that people look up to and go, I want to identify with that person, or I want to do business with that person because they're brave.
Fantastic, cool. I've got a few things, a few notes here from what you're saying, which is all really interesting. You say, like, you've got this accountant, this accountant person who's very on it with the social media, and she's really doing well because she's getting across her personality. So it sounds like it's the opposite of what the natural thing would be to do, in my mind, which is to lean into the work stuff and try and tell people about your work.
Yeah.
But it sounds like you want to do the opposite and you want to talk about the personality. Well, no, not talk about the personality, but, you know, flesh it out and don't be afraid to hide it.
Yeah. So people think that what they know and the knowledge they've acquired kind of differentiates them from everyone else. Well, we live in a society now where we're all interconnected through the web. I can jump on Google and find out anything I want to know in terms of information at the touch of a button. I want to be delivered that information by someone I know, like, and trust and respect. And when you become more personable, when you start relaying information because you know your stuff in your sector, it's more human and it's delivered in a way, it's, you know, you're compartmentalizing and packaging up that information in a way that's digestible because you want to listen to it. Cherry's a great example. I think I connected with her because she did a post a while back talking about the tax incentives for electric vehicles. And I will get an electric vehicle at some point. But I was like, hold on a minute, she's an accountant. She's telling me this information for free and I'm having to pay my accountant to tell me this stuff. And sometimes they don't even tell me it. There's just tons of value there. So I was like, yeah, I'm gonna follow her and listen to what she's got to say. So yeah, it's the know, like, and trust principle. You're putting out content at scale so people get to know you. They get to like you from the value-driven stuff you produce, and then they trust you from the sales side of it. You know, people think that you shouldn't sell on LinkedIn and you can't sell on LinkedIn. You can sell. There are ways of doing it. But it's a traditional kind of funnel, really. You're getting many people into the top of it and you're kind of pulling them down your funnel into a sale, basically. But you only do that by delivering, you know, I think I read a statistic somewhere that people need to see on average 13 pieces of content before they make a purchase decision from you. So it's a long game. You have to keep grinding away at it. I mean, it took me about 3 months, I think, on the platform to kind of figure out how this all works, then probably another further 6 months of testing, and it's only about till about sort of 9 months where I build a system where it brings in leads. And that probably goes hand in hand with the amount of followers I've got. I think going from originally when I started, going from 1,000 to 5,000 followers took me about 6 months, I think, maybe 7 months, but then from 5,000 to 10,000 is only taking me 2 months. So you're getting that, you know, it's the snowballing effect of the more followers you acquire, the more you acquire. And it's people kind of look at it as well as, you know, that they think that they should only kind of niche down into a sector or target market where they're targeting. But I don't subscribe to that notion that you should be. It's a popularity contest. So you want as many people as humanly possible seeing your content. So I will connect with literally anyone and everyone in any sector, because it's their second and third degree connections that are seeing my comments and my content that may end up purchasing something from me. So,
So you're playing the long game.
Yeah. And it is a long game. You're building a whole kind of worlds of content around your personal brand and what you do and the value that you can deliver. And people ascribe value to, you know, there's this notion that value is, you know, you should be kind of teaching someone about something in your sector, but people forget and underutilize entertainment as value. When you're entertaining someone, you're making someone laugh or giggle or cry, it's entertaining and it's valuable to them. So that's kind of my secret sauce to what I do, is I deliver information and tips, but I do it in a humorous way. So I'm kind of doing the double whammy of, like, I'm teaching you something, but I'm doing it in a humorous way to make you laugh as well.
Well, I appreciate you sharing the secret sauce with us, Nick. Thank you. So we're talking about telling information to people for free, and I think some people think that's almost like a given these days. It's kind of like a permission marketing stuff by Seth Godin. Do you think it's absolutely essential? Do you think you can still sell without offering value up front, or do you think that's a no-go?
Yes, you can. Will the relationships be as strong? No, probably not. The essence of kind of fandom and creating a user base that, you know, engages with your content and wants to watch it, you're creating a kind of disconnect there in terms of, I'm sure you get it as well, you get kind of cold sales messages that come into your DMs, mine go straight in the bin, because there's no essence of relationship there. It's, you know, it's like going up to someone in the bar and, like, you know, do you want to go home with me? It's like, it doesn't work like that. You have to build up a much longer term relationship. And those relationships over time, they bear huge fruit. It's a long-term strategy. You can do it, and you can do it short-term. I guess it depends on the kind of product you're delivering. Obviously, we're a service-based company, so there needs to be that level of relationships and trust there. And that's built up through the content that I deliver.
Nice, thank you. Slight change of topic, back to something you mentioned earlier. You said you hate personal branding. Not the thing, but the words. What is it about it?
Yeah, I think it's just been done to death, I think. And kind of, you know, people are always referring to the term personal brand all the time. It's my kind of spin on it is I call it brand world building. So you're building whole worlds of content, like I said at the beginning, around this concept of the central core of who you are, and all this content. You know, a lot of my content's very, very kind of nostalgic, because I'm appealing to people that are in my age bracket. So straight away they see the nostalgic stuff and it's like, oh yeah, I remember. There's a method to my madness with a lot of why it probably doesn't look like it on the surface, but there is a strategy in place for the kinds of content that I deliver and the kind of stories and messages that I put out. It's not always, you know, when I say that, it sounds like I've got some sort of, you know, kind of master game plan for all this stuff. It's all kind of like intrinsically mapped out. Some of it isn't. It's still kind of off the cuff stuff. Like, I put a post up today. I did a Zoom call all day yesterday and just left my Zoom open for people to kind of jump on. And I put a piece of content up earlier, and it was one of my guests on there was shoving marshmallows into her mouth. So it was just like, perfect piece of content. So I've got no content ideas today, so I just whacked that up. There's not always a rationale to it, but I think if you keep that in the back of your mind the whole time, that you're, you know, this is who I am, and these are the core values I hold to myself and my business, that will always resonate through your content, and it should.
Fab, thank you. I'm just wondering, you mentioned people shoving marshmallows into their mouth and posting about that. You see, you strike me as someone that's super consistent with LinkedIn. Like, in the opposite of that is probably me, who posts like once a week about the podcast at the minute. But you're out there like every day consistently smashing it, just posting something. I saw you post the other day about not having something to post. So how...
that posted really well, ironically.
Yeah, that's like incredible. And I'm just out here scratching my head. So how important do you think that consistency is to being successful, I guess, on that platform and just in a branding sense?
It's hugely important. There's a misconception that everyone in your audience is always seeing your content and they will get sick of it. They won't. Not everyone in your audience is active all the time on LinkedIn. You know, they go to other platforms, they're busy. Not everyone in your audience algorithmically will see your content. The thing is, you've got a free-to-use platform, as all social media platforms are, where you can advertise your goods and services and what you do and who you are for free. Why wouldn't you advertise 20 times a day if you could on that platform? That's my logic. So I don't want to slow down with my marketing efforts. I want to ramp them up. I mean, I went from when I first started, I think I was posting once a day, 7 days a week. Now I'm posting sometimes 2 to 3 times a day, 7 days a week. The thing we had when we first kind of started the business was, as most businesses are, because we're a service-based business, we'd do marketing, we'd get the work in, and then we'd be busy doing the work, and then it would fall off again, so we'd have to go to marketing again. So our year looked like this, whereas now it's starting to look like this because we're being consistent with our marketing efforts. So it's it's hard work. I'm not going to lie, it's a full-time job doing marketing on the platform. The thing that I kind of find is that they condition you to be like, you know, you need to be active on Twitter and you need to be active on Facebook and Instagram and blah blah blah. It's like, don't spread yourself thin over 5, 6, 7 platforms. Go in on 1 or 2, but really go in. Like, I'm the kind of person that I'm all in or nothing. So when I started using the platform, I was like, right, I'm going to completely understand how this thing works and just completely commit the time and energy to doing it. And it's paid off. So it's, don't get me wrong, it's hard work, but it's worth it in the long run.
Yeah, for sure. How many hours do you think a business should be putting in if they want to go all in on LinkedIn?
I mean, I'm probably per day on average, I'm probably on there anywhere between maybe 3 to 4 hours maybe a day, maybe sometimes even six hours a day. It's not just, there's what I call the 3 C's on the platform. So it's content, conversation and conversion. You can, if you want to, actually skip the content side of it and go straight to the conversation, which means what I try and do is obviously put up content every day. It's the conversational engagement on that content that does well with the post. So what I do is I'll try on average to engage with 50 other people's posts during the day, and I'll go in and I'll comment on their posts as well. And it's not just, you know, kind of throw away engagement. It's like actually take the time to read that person's post, see what they've posted, and leave a meaningful comment on there, so that, you know, you're getting into a conversation with that person and their audience is seeing you as well.
Nice. So last LinkedIn question. Some people think we've reached the end of the golden years of LinkedIn because they think that it's going the same way that Facebook went with the advertisements and Instagram and such and such.
Yeah.
So do you think that's the case? And do you think it's a bad thing? Do you think you're going to stick with LinkedIn for a long time?
Yeah. Why would I go anywhere else? My audience is there. They're not going anywhere. There's still the same people there. Still the same people that I'm going to end up selling to. If everyone buggers off, brilliant. There's more room for me to go all in. So that's my rationale. But people are saying that the organic reach is dying. I haven't noticed that. The only thing I've noticed it on, ironically, is video content at the moment. That may change as the algorithm changes. This all started to happen around the time of the US presidential election. The algorithmic reach on video content started to drop off, which I have a theory that maybe it was due to censoring, maybe. And it's much easier for them algorithmically to track a text post to see if there's any keywords in there. But I'm not noticing the organic reach on my text posts, image posts dropping off. So it's only applicable to video content at the moment, which means they may be pushing ads more and dropping the reach of the video. It may change again. So it usually does. So I think everyone's gone into like panic mode. It's like, oh, the organic reach is dying. It's you know, but I don't necessarily think that's, you know, if the organic reach was dying, it'd be dying consistently across every single post that I put, and it isn't. So
cool. So going back again a bit, you mentioned that you think sales is sometimes a bit of a dirty word. Do you think it has to be? And why do you think that?
I think it's, you know, people don't come to the platform to be sold to ultimately. And it's, you know, that they go there for, I mean, for me, it's a massively huge, the amount of content and the amount of stuff that you can learn for free, you know, the amount of stuff that I've learned about business over the last 6 months on that platform, it's been worth hundreds of thousands of pounds to my business. And where else could I learn it that quickly? It's bonkers. So that's the main reason I come to the platform is to learn, really. And it's a great resource for that. Yeah, no one wants to be sold to on the platform, but it's the main reason we're there. But it's not just a case of selling as well. You know, you're building kind of brand presence on the platform. You know, you're building relationships. You know, if you're looking for a particular supplier, I've helped other people kind of find other people on the platform. And you're building up that kind of reputation and value as just being, you know, a nice person. So, you know, when someone does want your particular service, hopefully they'll come to you because you've helped them out. It's the reciprocity principle, and it's kind of my mantra for the business, is that I want to, my goal for the business is I want to deliver as much value as humanly possible until I make people sick of it. and then, you know, and then hopefully when they come to that purchase decision, then yeah, they'll go with us. But don't go in first with that. That's, you know, that's way down the end of the line in terms of you know, you have to put the work in first to go fishing. You've got to put a lot of bait in. You've got to sit at the side of that lake for a long time. So, to use the old fishing analogy.
Excellent. So is it okay to tell people what you're doing, shout about that? Because I'm wondering if they'd even know what you do if you don't tell people.
Yeah, you absolutely do. My twice a week I'll put a post up saying, you know, this is what we do, this is the services we offer. A typical example is, I think I did one last week saying, you know, that I can give you the kind of top three tips for you to help increase your reach on your video content. Just pop a yes please down in the comments and I'll DM you and tell you what they are. Then straight away you're into a conversation with those people. If you're putting up barriers to entry, I see a lot of people put up those kind of posts, it's like, oh, just DM me. But you're putting up an extra barrier in terms of them. People are lazy. Humans are lazy by their nature. And if you're putting up a barrier to entry by asking someone to DM you, they're not going to do it. It's an extra step for them to do it. If they're commenting on the post and just putting a yes, then you can reach out to those people afterwards and start a conversation with them and hopefully get them on the sales call.
Great.
That's how you do it.
Cheers. I'll go away and be frantically typing things up now. Okay, we started with story branding and I feel like we've gone around and around and we've ended up on LinkedIn, which is brilliant because I'd see you as a bit of a maestro of LinkedIn and you've got a lot of great stuff to share on it. But I wonder if we could finish up with some story branding stuff. So how do you think like experts can go about focusing on story branding, like within their own business? How can they figure it out and make use of it?
There is a great book. I think it's by Donald Miller. I might be getting that wrong.
I know exactly.
It is Donald Miller.
Yeah.
Called Story Brand. And it's well worth reading. And he takes, like I said before, that there's no person better suited to doing this kind of stuff than people that tell stories, filmmakers, because we're taking those kind of archetypes of the hero and the villain and the guide. And that's what he's doing as well. It's like you're taking your customer on this journey of being a hero, having an issue or problem that they solve, and then they overcome it and, you know, they get an amazing result at the other end. But that's well worth a read. If you haven't read it, it's Story Brand by Donald Miller, because he kind of breaks down the journey of you, your product or your service offering and your customer, and gets you to frame it exactly like a typical story. There's the, I can't remember who it's by now, the hero's journey, which Donald Miller used for the template for story branding, but it's applicable to, you know, all films and all stories are pretty much much the same. A classic example of this is Star Wars. It's almost completely archetypal in its use of kind of the hero's journey and kind of meeting Obi-Wan Kenobi, who's the guide. And then Luke goes through that transformation and, he goes from farm boy to Jedi. And it's the perfect example of that kind of sort of classical mythological story archetype. But when you start to apply those principles to your business and your brand, you'll be surprised. It's stories are much easier to digest for people than any other medium, really, and that's why taking the time to develop your story and tell it in a sort of salient and resonant way that appeals to your target market is extremely important. But it takes time to do that. It's like I've said before, I think a lot of businesses kind of overthink. They don't always kind of listen to what it is their customers want. They build a product and then it's like, okay, people will want this. It's like, well, why should they start to think about, and I always do this, is think about the customer or your audience first. Build your content around them. They're the important ones. They're the ones that are going to digest it. They're the ones that are going to use your service or product or offering. So appeal to them. Don't make it about you. It's crossing that continuity gap between, you know, who you are and who your business is and your audience, and it's that big gap in the middle that you need to fill with that story in order for them to want to buy into what you're selling.
Fantastic. And I've got a little idea of how people can find out about what the customers want, but before I share, how do you think, Nick, people can find out what the customers want, and how do you think they should
ask them? It's the most simple, just do research. If you've got a product or service offering that you're thinking about launching, speak to your audience and say, would you be interested in this? Would it work? Would you buy it? Why wouldn't you buy it? What could I tweak on this? Get as much feedback as you can from them before you go to market with it and actually sell it, because you'll be amazed how quickly you'll learn from what you're selling based on their feedback. And that never stops. You don't just create a product and then you sell it and happy days, you're off to the races. You're continuously evolving that product as new technologies and systems speed up the process or make it better. So it's a continuously evolving process, but speak to them, just ask them.
Brilliant, good answer. That was going to be mine as well. So just we've just touched on the topic of Star Wars. I'm just curious, this isn't not work related at all, but what did you think of the latest trilogy?
It's a bit of a sore point with me. My analogy was that Disney ended up buying the franchise from Lucasfilm. There was obviously a higher senior exec level at Disney. It was like, okay, we need to get return on our investment pronto. So let's smash out some films and cash in quickly. And that's what it feels like. It was like, Star Wars is like a really good burger. It's like a really classy burger. And it just felt like really fast, cheap, nasty fast food. Those ones, it's like, take the time to develop that story. If the characters aren't likable and you're not investing your time in them, why would you want to watch? I love the fact that they took Rey as a central character, because it's I found it very hard for my daughter to get into Star Wars, but she really kind of connected with the character of Rey and she loved it from that regard. So what they did there was really well done. But yeah, they need to take the time. It always amazes me how much money goes into larger franchises and how little money goes into actual story development and scripting. Yeah, it's mind-boggling. You'd think that's where you'd kind of most of the money should go into. First of all, if the story's concrete, you haven't got to do that much work to make it work, really. But yeah, they weren't good. I mean, they were a darn sight better than the prequel ones that Lucas did. But also, I mean, you look at The Mandalorian's done really well on Disney as well, and I think they're launching a lot more Star Wars stuff, or Star Wars kind of related IP over the next like few years. So they're starting to kind of, if you look at what Marvel's done with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, they start to apply that same kind of methodology to Star Wars as well, then it'll work. So I've still got high hopes.
Ace, I suppose all those things you just said about why wouldn't they do this and they should have done this applies to content tips for business owners as well. So that's something that anyone listening could probably rewind and listen to again and use, leverage to make better content.
Yeah, the great thing about social media is that people underestimate is that you have a feedback loop there, and it's instantaneous. You can see what kind of content your audience is resonating, why they're resonating with it, keep learning from it and keep serving up. If the content's not working, stop doing it. If the content's working, find out what worked and keep doing more of it. It's not rocket science, but people don't, they don't invest the time and energy to figure out the kind of stuff that does work and doesn't work. And you know, there's no better medium for it in terms of having that feedback loop to learn from your audience than social media. So utilize it. It's fantastic.
Great, yeah. Do your research. Okay, probably a good time to wrap it up, Nick. Would you agree?
Yes. Yeah, mate. Yeah, I've got a crap ton of stuff to do now, so pardon my French. But yeah, I'm going to. I need to crack on with the day. But no, it's been awesome hanging out, dude.
Absolutely. It's been great. Thank you very much for your time today. So where can listeners find out more about you online?
Head on over to LinkedIn, search for my hashtag, which is That Video Nerd, and follow along and check out some of my crazy content.
Wonderful. I'm sure they will. I can vouch for it as well. It's really good.
Cheers, mate.
So brilliant. Thanks very much for having us today. Pleasure to have you on. And thanks for joining us today. Sorry. And it's clearly too early for me in the morning as well.
More coffee's needed, I think.
Absolutely. Okay, everyone. Thanks for listening, and please join me again on Building Business Brands. This is the last one for this year, so have a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Yeah.
And ta-ra for now.
Yep. See you in 2021.